I shortened the title of my prezo up here just because that was a mouthful, but really talking about just creating quality content on a budget. The demands for content, as we all know in this room, are incredibly high. So how do we keep up with the demands while we're working on limited budgets, because this is all ephemeral content, right? It disappears. Why are we going to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on it? Before we get in, the last time I presented at the Social Media Strategy Summit, I was an agency, and I felt really weird talking about, like, oh, here's the agency, but I don't feel as weird doing it because it's a brand. I just want to make sure everybody knows what Grubhub is, because we're going to be talking a lot about our content. New Yorkers in the room, Seamless, right? Seamless and Grubhub are the same brand. So we operate as Seamless in New York City. Grubhub is our national brand. You may have heard us in the news recently. We just acquired E24 from Yelp, Foodler in the Boston area, OrderUp. So growing tremendously. We're the largest food delivery company in the nation. So a little bit of facts, and I want to sort of tell you this to give you the scope of, like, we're a big brand, but we work on a really small budget. We have 75,000 restaurants. We're in 1,200 cities across the country. We have 9 million active diners, placing over 300,000 orders every single day. We're a big business, but we are really scrappy. Our CMO's motto is scrappy, not crappy, when it comes to our content, and that's kind of what drives our philosophy when we're creating anything. Again, just to, like, give you the sense of, like, we're not a product. We're not a food company. We are the middleman, right? We connect really hungry people with local restaurants near them. You find the restaurant that you want to order from. You find the food that you want. You submit order. And then it's delivered to you. Sometimes Grubhub is doing the delivery. We have drivers. And sometimes the restaurants are. So we don't have products. We have partners. Our restaurants are delivery people. So we're not as lucky as saying, like, hey, I used to work for Baked by Melissa, right? Cupcakes all day, every day. We take pictures of all of our cupcakes as much as we wanted to. We don't have that benefit at Grubhub. We're a tech company, right? So we don't have a product, which is interesting when we're creating content. It creates some opportunities, but also some challenges. But we still are committed to creating amazing content. This is our Instagram feed, just a couple of shots of it. And our philosophy when we create content is food first with signs of humanity. So we've done a lot of testing. A bare shot of food may not perform as well as a shot. You can't see it as well in this, but that's a burger with a drippy egg yolk in someone's hands, right? So the hands are there. You know that someone's kind of squeezed and popped that yolk. Who doesn't love yolk porn on Instagram, right? It's a very popular hashtag. I spend a lot of my time looking at yolk porn. But again, signs of humanity, right? There's people that were here. There's a fork. There's a bite. There's an element that's not quite perfect. And sometimes that'll pop up in the video element. So we do a lot of GIFs, a lot of stop motion. So some of those will have those signs of humanity coming in, via motion or animation. So that's kind of the feed there. But we create content across a lot of channels. We're publishing every single day on Instagram on both Grubhub and Seamless. So we're talking 60-plus pieces of content every month just on Instagram. Facebook for us is really about acting like a publisher. So we have a blog that I'll talk about in a little while, but we use Facebook to drive traffic organically to that site, and we're posting anywhere from 3 to 5 times a day. We're testing a lot. We test. It's like someone said, hey, post 10 times a day, and we're like, 10 feels like a lot, and they're like, test it and prove to me that it's wrong, and then scale back from there. So we do it until we see a diminishing return, but lots and lots of link posts, but not driving to product, driving to more content to kind of continue to build that relationship. A lot of video content, horizontal, like full screen video, a lot of carousels. The one all the way on the right is actually just UGC, and that one links to an article about pizza. And Twitter, we are tweeting each month about 500 to 1,000 times per brand. So we're constantly on, our community manager, our care team. And it's silly and weird, and sometimes it's polls like, does cilantro taste like soap? Who here thinks cilantro tastes like soap? Do we have any cilantro soap people? We're all cilantro fans, no? Yeah? Well, no, but 24% of people say yes. This is an actual thing. Some people eat cilantro and go, it tastes like soap. I don't know those people because I love cilantro. But, you know, we're engaging in trending hashtags. It's created on the fly, but there's a lot of content. And then finally, some of our owned content. About 13 months ago, we created a blog called The Crave, and we publish everything from data-driven content, like 10 trending dishes for October, so it's food that we see sort of spiking in orders because we know what people eat and order every single day, to kind of weird things like, are you the chicken wing or the celery stick, which is a quiz. and our CMO is like, it's really weird, but okay, try it. And then it's the most engaged piece of content we've created because people are strange. The are you a hot dog or a hamburger quiz over the 4th of July, lot of drama over that. Some people were like, oh my God, everything I knew about myself is wrong. I would have sworn I was a hamburger and I'm a hot dog. It's crazy. But lots and lots of content. We're posting, you know, on the blog anywhere from, you know, every day to two or three times a day, just depending on what's going on. So a lot of content, and we create everything in-house. So we don't really work with third parties to create it. We have a few production partners for certain programs, but are always on editorial flow, which is the portion of the biz that I'm managing, is all done in-house with our existing resources. And I wanted just to share some content stats. I know this is the content track, so if you're in this room for more than one session, you've probably seen various iterations of this, but I thought everybody likes a moment that they can tweet, or a fact that they can tweet during the session, and then you can kind of kick back and your boss is like, oh, they shared 3 tweets during that time, so they're being really productive at the conference. So this is your tweetable moment. And I just think that they're interesting to kind of, you know, frame the value of content and context, which is an important distinction. But 2/3 of consumers say information provided by content marketing helps them make better decisions. So this kind of comparison, look, I see people, you're not even tweeting, you're just gonna take a picture and like upload the picture and be like, ah, here you go, look at this, read this information, rich media. So this is the difference of like a picture of Chinese food and hitting people with a picture of Chinese food and hitting people with an article that says how to order Chinese food like a pro. 7 Chinese food dishes that you need to order tonight, right? So it's more content and not just advertising. It's giving people a little bit more information so that their next Chinese food order is not just chicken and broccoli. It's something amazing. It's the article that we have about what to do with like the leftover sauce packets that you get from your orders, right? It's that helpful kind of insights. More than half of people say they're more willing to buy another product from a company that provides content marketing. And this is why if you place an order on Grubhub and you hit our thank you page, you're gonna see another piece of content from us. You're gonna see a video. You're gonna see an article. And the goal of it isn't to get you to order because you've literally just ordered. We're not like, oh my gosh, like you just ordered a hamburger, but here's a Chinese food article, like go and order Chinese food again. No, we're saying continue to engage with us and connect with us and build that relationship because you're more valuable to us over time and we're more valuable to you. We're not just, you know, a means to an end. You're hungry, you eat food, done. No, this is relationship building. And then finally, this is the no-brainer. Interesting content is a reason why people follow you on social media. The other two are promos, discounts, and giveaways. So if you can't afford to constantly give things away or host contests, you can afford to do great content. So it's kind of the easy way to get in people's good graces. So essentially, that's like my favorite joke of all time. I don't know, I'm like a 30-something person with no children, but I live for dad jokes. I'm like, this is me in a nutshell. Basically, content marketing is all the marketing that's left. Any good marketing is content marketing. The rest of it's advertising. And I don't know about you, but I haven't said I work in advertising in over 10 years. I say I'm a marketer. I work in marketing. And there's a distinction that's subtle but really important. And the smartest companies market, they don't advertise. But it costs money, and I don't know about you, but if I just like opened the window and blew cash out the window, our CMO would be like, what are you doing? Stop spending all this money. Be more efficient. Scrappy is one of our core values at Grubhub. So it is demanded of us. So I want to go through and just kind of show you how this content is created to hopefully like let you go back and be like, hey, we can do this stuff super fast and easy. So I just kind of went through and wanted to call out how these were actually created, like give you the secret sauce, show you behind the curtain. That awesome burger with the yolk porn dripping everywhere is user-generated. We have a network of restaurants, like I talked about. That's kind of our product, our partners, our restaurants. We know who those restaurants are. We know if they're on Grubhub. People geotag the food that they're eating, where they've gotten it from. And then we just reach out to them and say, oh my gosh, this is an amazing picture. Can we regram this? I've never had anybody say no. Sometimes people don't answer, and the 3 minutes later, they're like, oh my God, I totally missed this in my other inbox on Instagram. But yes, please use whatever you like. This is a free way to get content. It's mutually beneficial for you and the creator. And some people are like, well, you're Grubhub, you're seamless. Of course people want you to share their content. We have a very modest following on Instagram. We got into Instagram a little bit late in the game. Grubhub, we're talking 33, 34,000 followers. Seamless, 15, 16,000 followers. These aren't huge numbers. We're not 3 million. We can't say, you're going to get crazy exposure if you let us regram you. They have more followers than we do, right? But they're like, yes, please. It's cool. It's exciting. And, you know, we're always really authentic in how we ask. And our legal team is amazing. I know some folks have legal that don't let them do this. Our legal is like, understands the space, says, ask them, screenshot the permissions, put the screenshots in a file in case anything happens, and please make sure there's not like a sports jersey or a can of Coca-Cola in the image that you're regramming, because then we can get in trouble. But straight food shots, you know, we don't usually have people's faces, so you'll see like that influencer post up there. There's no faces in there, right? So we just worked on a couple of rules and guidelines, and we do a ton of this user-generated content. Influencer content is huge for us also. We have a really robust influencer program. Garners us, you know, hundreds of millions of impressions every year. And it's incredibly low cost. You say influencer and people are like, you know, $100,000 for a post. We don't work with the Kardashians. We don't work with anybody in Taylor Swift's squad. Like, we are working with people who are, you know, foodies, lifestyle folks. We're very fortunate the food space hasn't quite been as infiltrated with like the super expensive influencers the way that maybe beauty or fashion is. These guys work for lunch. You know, hey, we'll give you a $100 Grubhub gift card, a $50 Grubhub gift card, right? Depending on what the ask is. Sometimes there's a couple hundred dollars in fees associated with it, but for the most part, I think we get too intimidated to talk to the influencers, and then we don't, but realistically, they're incredibly cost effective, and we're publishing, you know, 200 to 250 influencer pieces of content every quarter. So it's a pretty robust portion of what we're doing from a content perspective, mostly across Instagram and then YouTube. We work with YouTube creators as well. And then what I like to call Grubhubified stock, which is, you know, stock doesn't have to be a dirty word, but you have to make it authentically your own. So this one right here, the poke, we call those our food anatomy posts. So we take our voice and tone and sort of like identify different parts of food that's either super popular or maybe people are less familiar with it. So we've done like taco de panza. We've done pierogi out of an insight that someone on our team was like, I've heard of pierogi, but I've never had pierogi before. We're like, oh my God, come to Veselka. So this is like our illustrated type. This is like a very Grubhub thing. It's in a lot of our collateral. And the reason I know it's working is because a competitor who shall not be named started doing this last week on their content on Instagram. So imitation is the most sincere form of flattery. So I am highly flattered that they've taken this concept and implemented it into their own Instagram feed. But that's just a stock asset that we have, you know, dropped our own little thumbprint on, our fingerprint. And then something that we do a ton, super scrappy, we have TV shoots and out-of-home shoots, and when those happen, I reach out to our creative director and our social art director in-house, and I go, can someone go and casually bring their phone and take pictures of the food when they're done with it for the fancy shoot? And we did this at a shoot over the summer, and we got like 50 different food boomerangs just by being like, oh, you're done with the tacos for that shot, and just grabbing the tacos and taking it into a well-lit area and just taking boomerangs. Most of the hands that you see in that type of stuff from us are actually our employees. So they have famous hands. But it's all, you know, created and generated, super low cost, all done internally. So it looks beautiful. I think we're really proud of what's coming out there. But it was all created on a very, very small to little no budget. And then we go to Facebook, and I talked about, you know, a lot of publishing. So, you know, for us, it's all about assets that drive to traffic that we, or that drive traffic to properties that we own. I think gone are the days that like a great photo on Facebook starts to take off. So we think about what are interesting pieces of collateral and content that we can create that drives traffic and that also plays to the feed. So we've started doing a lot of full screen video. It's just a better, more engaging experience. People are on mobile, takes up the whole screen. And we found this little niche with kind of texting videos. So we build a scenario where people would be, you know, maybe using Grubhub, and a lot of people eat a meal with somebody else. And it could be anything from, okay, it's new parents and they put the kid down to sleep and they need to get food, so they're texting their order back and forth. Or, oh gosh, we had a date this morning and I overslept, we missed the farmer's market, let's order food instead. And because these are just phone screens, we take the phone screen and screenshot and animate. It's not rocket science, right? The longest part of it is just agreeing on, like, would somebody really, like, abbreviate seriously, S-R-S-L-Y? Like, there's a lot of that back and forth, and, like, we should use the praise hands emojis. No, we should use, like, the thumbs up. Like, that's the kind of back and forth that takes the longest to get these approved, not the actual creation. We also repurpose our out-of-home. So if you're spending money at an organization, right, on assets and collateral, use them and repurpose them. So if you walk by MSG, you'll see this huge seamless takeover right now. And instead of just saying, hey, it's going to be up for 2 weeks and we're spending a pretty penny on it, we asked for layered files and got all of the assets, and we recreated those to fit into the feed. We built a giveaway, you know, made it really social friendly to get the most bang for your buck, literally. And then, like I mentioned before, the asset on the right is user-generated. It's great pizza pics. Our seamless strategy is 100% user and influencer-generated content, 100%. Not just on Instagram. We pop them into Facebook also. And then this is the silliest, but this is the most fun. I think our community manager just has a ball. We're just creating content on the fly. Like, we don't want to be like a brand that says bae, but there was this, I don't know if people started seeing it. I think the kids right now are saying, like, first of all, and then something like really arbitrary, like, oh, we should go out after work. First of all, why are we waiting till after work? Like, it's that. I don't get it, but I accept it and appreciate it. And our community manager was like, I don't know, three people in a row tweeted this in the feed. I think this is something, let's tweet it. And we tweeted it yesterday. We don't have, like, an arduous approval process. Clearly, we're like, hey, Lisa Simpson, cool. We have a lot of freedom on the channel, and, you know, we got like 30 likes on the tweet when it went up, which for us is high, and I think for most brands organically that, you know, we're not Denny's yet, but we're coming after you. So just kind of like keeping an ear to the ground and creating content on the fly, that's what allows us to have, you know, 500, 700, 1,000 pieces of content and engagements in that space. And then our blog is all about, like, data-driven. We own it. But the biggest thing here, I have one content manager on my team. We work 2 weeks out to build a calendar, and then we meet weekly to say what's trending, what's happening. And then we make articles based on what's trending. So is it time to switch to hot coffee? We saw Google Trends start to go up for, like, iced coffee, hot latte, like that kind of thing. So we needed to create an article, but we weren't going to go out and shoot, like, gorgeous lattes and, you know, latte art and all that crazy stuff. It's just like, here are three reasons you should keep drinking iced coffee and three reasons you should keep drinking hot, or you should make the switch to hot. And, you know, we're a headline-driven society. I think if every person who actually clicked read the article, I'd be shocked. They're spending a little bit of time on it, but they're clicking out into our product. Oh my gosh, you can get coffee delivered on Seamless or Grubhub. That's crazy. You can. So it's, again, taking just those insights. And then we develop the idea from the insights, create it in real time on the fly, and then we distribute it internally. I am by no means a paid social expert, but we have figured out how to distribute stuff paid on Twitter really fast, small budgets, like 4 cents a click, so super efficient. And we're a scrappy team. We get it done. There's three of us on the social media team for both Grubhub and Seamless, just to kind of, like, give you that scale. So just get it done. I wish these colors came out a little bit better, but this is really how we approach content. We iterate, we optimize, but where we're at today, talk to me next week, the pie might shift a little, but we are 70% generated, right? And that 70 splits up between employees, So I follow like almost everybody on the team in marketing, and one of our guys like did a little Instagram story of getting pickup, and I'm like, hey, send me these assets. Can I post these to the account? And he's like, yeah, cool. Will you tag me? I'm like, yes, like product marketing wizard at DrewRap, like ordering pickup. And the employees love it. They know if they if they're taking photos or they're taking videos. I'll see people like eating lunch and be like, will you take a picture of whatever it is you're eating and send it to me? Because you know we're all hungry. We all eat. We all use Grubhub. And Grubhub doesn't pay us to use it. It's because, especially in New York, it's how you survive. And then user-generated, again, we're searching for our restaurants and geotags. We are searching, you know, relevant hashtags. We will come up with an idea and then say, I bet we can find some content, particularly for Seamless. We pick a thematic for the week, so we go, like, weekly themes for content. This week, the theme is game day eats. And yesterday, we posted a picture of cheese fries with bacon from Sticky Fingers here in New York, and it broke 1,000 likes. Like I said, we only have like 15,000 people in the community just that organically got posted, and we're watching it. We're like, oh my God. And the person who created it, she's got under 50,000 followers. She actually used to be an employee of Seamless and Grubhub, and we're like, hey, this picture's awesome. We're doing game day eats. Can we share it? She's like, yeah, just you know, tag my handle in it. And we're like, check, done, absolutely. So a lot of generated, and then our influencer content, which we talked about, we take the best of the best, and we regram that, or we specifically ask the influencers to create content under a certain scenario. And then that 30% is created internally. And that could be created internally with our phones, created internally, you know, with our stock modified, et cetera. But like I said, 70% is completely generated from outside non-creative, non-production resources. So when we think about the funnel, I kind of wanted to hit on like each point of the funnel and how this approach actually works. So it's not just, yeah, it's a cheap way to create content, but is it actually the right way to create content? So for us, from an awareness perspective, we signed Wawa. Is there anybody that's from Wawa territory in the room? Wawa's a big deal, right? Oh my God, my husband is from Philadelphia, and he's like, we have to get sandwiches from Wawa. And I'm like, we live in New York, there's a bodega with sandwiches on every corner, and I have to stop at Wawa and order it from like a touch screen. Are you crazy? But Wawa is like, you know, take me to church, basically. So we were like, okay, Wawa being on the platform is a really big deal. But if we just say, hey, Wawa's on the platform, one, we're national. So people in California are gonna be like, what's a Wawa? And two, you know, the message extends better when it's truly, truly authentic. So we partnered with Philly Food Girl. She's a pretty small following, 20, 30,000 followers on Instagram. We saw that she had previously Instagrammed like her love of Wawa, so we're like, hey, who better to work with? And we said, hey, order lunch, Wawa's now on Grubhub, and share it to your community. And this was her post, ordered lunch, right? She's got sandwiches, soup, the whole nine yards. And what was great for us is we started to see some comments coming in like, good to know, this is awesome, I know where I'm getting lunch from. So that awareness is incredible because Philly Food Girl is gonna hit people in Philly who could actually be excited about Wawa and potentially place an order that day, next week, et cetera. And overall for us, influencer content gets around 450% more engagement than content that we're posting on our own channels because they have highly engaged followers and you know, it's person to person instead of brand to person, which is always gonna perform a little bit better. And when we regram and reshare their content, it performs 18% better than the rest of our content. So that's why we know it works, because the numbers show it. And why we do it, right? So it's all about the community, like I said, person to person instead of brand to person. Also, it allows us to extend what our community really is, right? So if we're gonna be like foodies, between the ages of 25 and 34, slightly more female to male, skews more affluent, more highly educated, that's like our little area to play in. We can work with influencers that are college students, that are new moms, that are part of the LGBTQIA community and seem authentic, right? During Pride Month, we did a lot of that activation. So it allows us to extend our own community. It also allows us to be more use case focused. So we did a series this summer with influencers around like an uncookout, right? So you have cookouts all summer and barbecues. Well, don't worry about making your food. We're gonna provide the food for you. So invite your friends, have an uncookout, and host a great party without having to stress out about, you know, what kind of food to bring and, you know, no more lumpy potato salad, right? So we were able to talk about that with our influencers instead of us showing, like, brunch on Sunday, busy moms, backyard barbecue. Like, we would look like we were having an existential crisis if we were sharing all of this content on our own feed, but we're able to partner with our influencers to kind of extend those messages and test out use cases that, you know, we want to see if they work. We launched Pickup, and we wanted to have a ton of content around Pickup, but we didn't want our feed to be all about picking up food, so we worked with influencers to generate that. It's also super cost effective, and again, you can scale it. I couldn't create 50 pieces of content about going to pick up your lunch after you've ordered it, but I can work with 50 influencers and then regram and reshare the best of the best from that. The next piece is conversion. So we use Facebook as a DR channel. It's all about converting new diners, existing customers, driving traffic. And these are our two ad sets that are in market right now. This one on the left, this was supposed to be FPO to our CMO to say, hey, this is an idea that we have of, like, that moment when your food arrives. Like, yes, like, food comes, you do a little dance, and you're excited. And our creative team was, that's Kathy. She's our art director. And that's her apartment. And the team was just like, hey, let's get out of the office and, like, brainstorm. And they shot a bunch of video photos. And our CMO was like, great, put it up tomorrow. And we're like, we didn't shoot it yet. And she's like, no, that's fine. That's awesome. We love that. So this was all shot on iPhones in someone's apartment. Tina's in a variety of them. Diego plays the delivery guy. And it was just like, you know, I'm like, oh gosh, we're going to need to get new employees. We're going to run out of our faces. We don't usually use their faces in it. So again, like, super, super scrappy. This cost, the money it cost was like they ordered lunch and we expensed their lunch. So that was the extent of cost. And then, you know, for Seamless, like I said, we've repurposed our out-of-home look and feel to just be more use case-based, and we have an amazing designer on our team who was able to create these. The scenario here is what I like to call the Seamless hat trick, which is when you order breakfast, lunch, and dinner on Seamless. Many a Saturday and Sunday is spent achieving this in my house. And then finally, oh no, one more. Okay, so why we go scrappy? It allows us to test iterations. So there are about 15 different versions of this ad, different settings, different styles, link posts, video posts, carousels, etc. And there's six of the one on the right, so we're able to iterate and just change and tweak and make modifications. It also allows us to fail really fast and then optimize, right? People had some comments about some of the stuff we were using for the one on the left. I grabbed our creatives and I was like, can we change this, this, and this? And they're like, cool, no problem. We made some modifications and we changed really quickly, which is incredible because we didn't spend a lot. So scrapping some pieces of it or making modifications was totally okay and totally approachable. And it stays true to the feed, right? Like, we blend. You want to blend in. You don't want to be like, boom, here's an ad. It kind of goes in with the style that we have here. And then last is all about loyalty. So this is when we engage and have fun and chat with people. So we were having an internal debate about are calzones just pizza tacos? And our content manager was like, you're ridiculous. And I was like, think about it. Like, it's like pizza. It's full. It's like kind of like a pizza taco, right? And we're like, let's go on Twitter and ask people on Twitter. So we just made this poll. Like, we're having a debate. We need opinions ASAP. Is a calzone a pizza taco? 60% of people said no. So then we wrote an article. Twitter poll shows that a calzone is not a pizza taco. This was a very, very successful Crave post that then became the most engaged piece of organic content on Facebook. We had over 250 comments of people being like, it's clearly a pizza empanada. Like, and I was like, oh my God, you're so right. It's a pizza empanada. And then you see, like, you know, Seth Bavis, a calzone isn't a pizza taco because it's sealed. A calzone is basically a pizza empanada. When you fold a big floppy slice of New York style pizza, then it becomes a pizza taco. 84 people liked this guy's really thoughtful analysis of us being like too late at night eating pizza in the office. And, you know, I'm with him. I think it is a pizza empanada. And I'm going to exclusively call calzones pizza empanadas from now on. So the end, takeaway, five S's of scrappy content. Get your phones out when it's done. Start tweeting. You can wake up again. keep it simple. The ideas don't have to be complicated. Hey, people are ordering poke a lot. Do you think people actually know what's in poke? Let's make an image that lets them know what's inside poke. It's scrappy. Hey, let's take our phones, let's take pictures, let's not take ourselves too seriously and just get it done quickly. Because my biggest fear is getting in what I actually just heard referred to as idea debt, where you have so many ideas and so little execution that you're always behind on bringing the ideas to life. We don't want to be in idea debt. We want to get it created, scrappy, and get it out the door. It should be really snackable. We shouldn't have to sit and watch something or look at it for too long. It should be, is a calzone a pizza taco, right? That's snackable content. It's not like, you know, should you eat pizza if you're on a, you know, low-carb diet? I mean, no, but like, that, or yes. Actually, the answer, should you eat pizza is all. The answer is yes, no matter what comes after that. Should be really shareable, right? Like, you want people to want to tag their friends in the amazing chili cheese fries that you just shared. And scalable. It doesn't work if you can't recreate it. It has to be a way to rinse and repeat, find what works, and do it again and again and again. Because if you strike lightning once, you need to be able to do it again, because nobody in the C-suite is going to go, great job, you're done for the year, goals accomplished. They're going to say, cool, do it again. And if you blow your budget on one good idea, you're dead. So that's it. You've created awesome content. High five. Thanks, Jimmy Fallon. And that's it.
Thank you, Mallory.
Thank you. Where is he?
We have 9 minutes for Q&A.
There you are.
All right. And I think you all know the drill. I've got the mic. I'm going to hand it around. So we'll start right here.
Hi. How you doing? Marcus Hi. Washington, Georgia Power. I heard you say that the word influencers a lot. I see you work with a lot of influencers. Can you talk a little bit about what exactly you look at when you're choosing influencers? I heard you mention 30K and that not being a lot, but in a lot of circles that I'm in, 30K is like you've made it.
Yeah.
But I also know the side of 30K, hey, you might have bought those, and you may have bought those comments, and that might be a comment pod.
Yep.
So can you talk a little bit about how you look at your influencers and what you really look for when you choose those influencers?
Yep. So, one, we kind of tier out our influencers, and we will work with different tiers of influencers based on the program or based what we're, you know, what the goals are for the specific activation. But we say, like, anything under 30, actually anything under 50 is more of like a tier one lower scale influencer, just because that's more on par with what our own community size is. So we're thinking, like, how much are we amplifying our own reach? We also look at the type of content they create. We never regram from accounts that regram. So there are a lot of food content, and really content influencers on Instagram in general, that just regram other people's content and are just a food of great assets. That's not who we work with. We work with creators who have a unique point of view and who kind of reflect our own values. In terms of, you know, we're not going to work with somebody who's like posting like the bikini selfie and like in the background there's like a smoothie, like I just ate this smoothie, but it's like people are following you because you're posting like bikini pics. Like, you know, there's certain categories here. So that's huge for us. And we also look at engagements, because if you have 1 million followers but you have 100 likes, the ratio's off. So we look for like minimum 10% engagement, really looking 25% is like killer for us. 10% is kind of that like ideal of what they should be getting in terms of how engaged is the community. What are the comments? We also use a tool called Refluence that allows us to, one, put out asks and have influencers kind of apply to work with us, but also allows us to see like what are the categories that their following falls under, so we can again make sure that they are nationally based, right? Like, we're a national organization. If all your followers, you know, are in London or Paris, great from an awareness perspective, but you'll never be able to order from us. So that allows us just to kind of double check what our gut tells us when we're kind of sifting through the feed.
Okay, I saw some other hands go up here. Okay, one back here.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Heather. I manage social for Legoland Florida Resort. So not a ton of food content. But I was curious because your blog has a lot of like generic food content that's not really driving people to Grubhub. So I'm wondering, like, do you have a lot of CTA buttons on your content? Is that how you drive conversions? Because I was wondering.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it might say, are you a hot dog or hamburger, which is just, you know, silly, engaging, you know, not conversion lower funnel content. But there's going to be CTAs that are going to say, you know, if you're a hamburger, we have tons of content around hamburgers that you can either read more of that or, like, you're a hamburger, like, find the best hamburgers near you, and then it links you right back to the site. So there are CTAs, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10 CTAs peppered throughout the content. There's always one at the very bottom, and then they're peppered throughout. You know, if we're talking about a certain dish, we link to the dish. If it's cuisines, to the cuisine. So.
Gotcha, that makes sense.
Yep, lots of CTAs.
Thank you.
Hi, I really enjoyed your presentation.
Thank you.
My name's Lee, I'm with Sumbrella. When it comes to user-generated content, similar to you, we have a legal department that's a little bit nervous about recreating or reposting UGC. With that, how often are you actually mentioning the owner of the original owner of the content?
Always.
Okay.
Yeah, so thanks. We do that not just because legal wants us to and said it, but it's also kind of the value add back to the creator is, hey, we're going to give you credit. I'm sure everyone's seen multiple articles in the space around a brand that steals a creator's image and then puts it on their own page and doesn't give credit or doesn't ask permission. We always ask permission, and we always credit back to the creator. Yeah. And it actually helps boost engagement when we do that as well, because that person then gets the notification. They're like, oh, cool, they'll comment. It helps from the discover feature and explore. So it's actually more beneficial to us when we do it anyway.
We have time for about one more question, and I see three hands. I'm sorry. So, Mallory, I think you said you're going to hang around, right?
Yeah.
For the rest of the day? Okay,
yep.
So we're going to get this question in over here. How am I going to get there? I'm just going to throw it.
When you're doing behind-the-scenes content at shoots for, like, traditional, with the traditional agency team or creative team, do you ever get pushback from them in terms of, like, kind of what you're looking for in a wish list or whether they are, you know, can't fit something in that day, you know, or is it mostly an integrated relationship where they're happy to help, you know, kind of provide assets within the production shoot?
So anything that we have the agency provide to us, like, you know, B-roll or bloopers or anything like that, we usually put in the ask in advance, and then it just becomes a checklist that they cover, usually in post. And then the rest of the stuff, we're just like, hey, is it cool if we send one of our art directors just to come and, you know, take some photos so that we can share on social? And we haven't had any pushback yet on that. You know, I've heard some stories of people saying, you know, the agency doesn't want any other creatives on set, but our partners are really great, and we've worked with them for a while, and they know that we can't afford their rates to do social, and we'll work with them on larger campaigns if and when we can in the space. So having that, like, goodwill and partnership really, you know, it benefits all of us. So, and it allows us to, you know, showcase more of the work that was done during the work that they set up, so it's kind of a win-win.
Mallory, if you don't mind, I'm going to sneak one more question in. We've got two minutes up here. Let me just kind of work my way up here.
Hi. I'm Shay with Margo Media. I had a question about you working with the influencers. I know you said that a lot of these are, you know, smaller influencers, and you'll usually just do a simple exchange, like a $100 gift card in exchange for a post. How do you, like, or do you, I guess, my question, for something as small as that, do you still enforce the FTC laws, and how do you, like, follow up with that and always ensure that, like, the influencer is doing hashtag ad or making sure so that Grubhub doesn't get in trouble, and, like, how do you manage that?
Yep, that is actually where our legal is. Our legal's easygoing, but in terms of enforcing FTC, like, even when Instagram launched just the tag that's, like, paid partnership or paid sponsorship with, she was like, that's really great, but they also need to put it in the copy because, you know, the whole thing, and it's very loosey-goosey, as I'm sure we all know, it's like, the consumer needs to understand, and, I mean, that's a lot of credit and a lot of weight on the consumer's shoulders. So our legal is extra cautious, and whether we're giving somebody, whether we're, like, sending you a meal or sending you cash or a gift card or whatever, we always use hashtag ad, hashtag sponsor. If it's smaller amounts of just an exchange of good, our legal is okay with hashtag partner. But we've kind of moved away from that in the last maybe 6 months or so, just because that really does feel like a gray area of things, and we really don't want to get slammed by the FTC. So we require that for everybody. It's in the terms, and because we use our partner Refluence, everything is done through the platform. So when they sign up, you know, they're signing up and agree to those terms, and then the content is submitted from there so we can go in and check. If we're ever doing something not through Refluence, we have a standard legal template that legal worked, created once, and we share it back. And because those are smaller, one of the people on my team that does like 50% social management and then 50% influencer, he's checking, grabbing links, screenshotting things all the time. So yeah, that's one area where we're super strict.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Let's give it up for Mallory.
Thank you.